Paul Graham, a hyperactive and pink-cheeked computer science graduate student, had always considered himself more intelligent than virtually everyone else. In his 21 years, he hadn't seen much evidence to indicate otherwise. Then Paul heard from a friend about someone who, the friend said, was on another plane altogether. One day at an Aiken party shortly after Robert's return from Dallas, someone pointed out the brilliant young Morris. Paul went up to him. "Hey, aren't you Robert Morris?" The young man lowered his head and grinned, then pointed across the room at someone else and said, "No, that's him." It wasn't until several days later that Paul learned that he had been duped, if only because the same person who had disowned the name Robert Morris was always at Aiken Lab, always working until at least 3 a.m., and always working on something that seemed complex. When Paul started spending time at Aiken, Robert Morris was writing a program called Ray Tracer for a graduate-level computer graphics course. A ray tracer produces images of three-dimensional scenes. Given a model of the scene in geometric shapes, the ray tracer follows the path of individual rays of light from their source as they bounce off objects in the scene and eventually enter an observer's eye. The most impressive thing to Paul was that even though the course had ended and Robert had already received his grade, he was still working on perfecting the program for the sheer intellectual challenge of it. In fact, Robert's program was so interesting that it caught the interest of his roommate, Greg Cooperberg, a math student, who helped him with some of the more complex mathematics needed for constructing solid shapes. Ray tracing requires vast numbers of computing cycles, and Robert took them wherever he could find them. But he was scrupulous about not affecting the other users on the system, so he wrote a program a bit like John Schock's Vampire Worm for making use of perfectly good cycles on computers around the lab that would have otherwise gone to waste. When a user sat down at a workstation and began to type, the computer stopped doing Robert's work and went to work for its rightful owner. Robert extended his clever redistribution of cycle wealth so that other students could use it too. Paul came to call him by his login name, RTM. There was no limit, it seemed, to RTM's knowledge. He not only knew about the workings of the VAX, but he also knew about graphics, and he had read all the Unix source code. In Paul's view, RTM was no single-minded geek. This guy had read all of the Norse sagas, and he liked to go to the opera of all things. He was nothing like Paul's suburban contemporaries who had grown up addicted to video games, television, and junk food. When Paul left Monroeville, a Pittsburgh suburb known for its immense shopping mall, it served as the set for the cult film Dawn of the Dead. His years in front of the television haunted him through college. When he got to college, he tried to make up for lost time by going cold turkey. One glance at a television screen could well turn into a week-long binge. But here was someone with no interest in that electronic drug, nor in video games. Paul felt that, compared to Robert's, his childhood had been wasted. He envied Robert's upbringing, the rustic environment, the private school education, the adventurous vacations, the prominent father. Paul was in awe. He was a reluctant computer scientist who would rather have studied painting and looked upon others in the graduate program as irredeemably narrow-minded digit heads. Meeting RTM was the best thing that had happened to him all year. Paul knew that he and RTM were going to be good friends when he discovered one thing they had in common. Neither of them liked to sit in classrooms. And if a course failed to challenge them, both were inclined to skip class frequently. One day, Paul was sitting outside on the steps of Aiken reading a book when he was supposed to be sitting inside absorbing a lecture on artificial intelligence. When RTM walked up to him and took a look at Paul's book, the historian Jacob Bernhardt's History of the Italian Renaissance, he smiled. Both agreed that reading Burckhardt was a far better way to spend one's time. Others at Aiken considered Paul too unrestrained, but Robert was more willing to be his friend. He once took Paul along to a relative's house on an island off the main coast. As they were in a boat headed for the barren island which had no electricity or telephones, Robert said, "You're going to like this. From now on, things are done right." It was Robert's appreciation for things that had nothing to do with material possessions that impressed Paul. But Paul was concerned that his friend RTM didn't have girlfriends. "If you like someone, RTM, you gotta say something to her," Paul would insist. "You can't expect her to read your mind." "But what are shy people supposed to do?" Robert would reply. More than once, Robert and his friends got the itch to make a killing from their specialized knowledge. After completing their much-praised ray tracer, Robert and Cooperberg gave brief thought to launching a computer graphics firm. And with David Hendler, Robert mulled over the idea of a computerized method for predicting the commodities market. Robert hatched his most far-fetched get-rich plan with Paul Graham when the two decided they could make a bundle predicting the horse races at Suffolk Downs. Paul kept copies of the racing form locked in his desk drawer, and the two spent hours entering reams of data about past races into the computer. But after two depressing afternoons of mingling with crowds of desperate middle-aged men as they walked from the subway station to the racetrack, they decided it wasn't worth the effort. The summer after his junior year in 1987, Robert worked at Digital for the second year in a row, this time in Palo Alto. The previous summer he had spent at Digital's engineering facility in Nashaw, New Hampshire, the same facility Kevin Mitnick would later break into electronically, working on routine programming tasks, which he found only moderately interesting. But the Palo Alto summer was wonderful. While there, he worked on graphics programs and programming languages, trying things that had never been done. The work was extremely challenging, and Robert thrived. The Morris family, in the meantime, was uprooting itself from New Jersey and Bell Labs after 26 years. Bob had gotten frustrated at the labs. He had been waiting for months to be appointed to a new position that would oversee the creation of a secure version of Unix, a version with no security flaws. The job got stalled in the bureaucracy, and while Bob's patience was wearing thin, the National Security Agency came to him with an offer he couldn't refuse. To be chief scientist at the National Computer Security Center, the unclassified component of the NSA. The center had been established to improve the security of computers within the military services, but was later given a broader mandate that encompassed establishing computer security standards in the commercial world as well. The job was particularly attractive to Bob because while most of his work revolved around the more public center, there was a classified aspect as well. Part of the time, he worked in the arcane intelligence-gathering world of the NSA. Bob and Ann sold the old house in Millington and moved to Arnold, a small Maryland suburb along the banks of the Severn River. Bob had crossed the line from theoretical research into a real game with real players. Ann was sad to give up her job as director of the Association of New Jersey Environmental Commissions, but she knew this was precisely the career boost Bob wanted. She eventually took a job with an environmental group in Washington, which required a long commute each day. Meanwhile, Robert's senior year was another period of both intense work and good fun at Aiken. Schoolwork was shunted aside yet again. One geometry course that Robert found excruciatingly dull, he scarcely attended at all. Despite a lot of cramming for the final, he failed the course. He spent little time in his room at Dunster House, the Harvard dormitory where his father had also once lived, preferring to sleep on the couch at the group house where David Hendler was living. Many evenings were spent cooking elaborate dinners and baking cookies to send to out-of-town friends. During his spring break, at his father's suggestion, Robert gave a talk at Bob's division of the NSA on everything he knew about Unix security. The following day, he repeated the lecture to a group at the Naval Research Laboratory.